Chapter 1. Standing Ground. This book has a hell of a lot going for it, simply because it's a hunting story. That's because hunting stories are the oldest and most widespread form of story on Earth. The genre has been around for so long and has such deep roots that it extends beyond humans. When two wolves meet up, they'll often go through a routine of smelling each other's breath. For a wolf to put his nose to another wolf's mouth is to pose a question. What happened while you were hunting? To exhale is to answer, you can still smell the blood. Of course, nothing tells a hunting story like a human. Long ago, our ancestors may have told hunting stories in ways that are similar to those of animals today. It's been proposed that the human kiss finds its origins in a mouth-to-mouth greeting similar to that of the modern wolves. Similarly, it's been proposed that the handshake originated as a way of proving that neither party was concealing a weapon. But at some point, at least by 50,000 years ago, though possibly much earlier, we began to tell our hunting stories through the complex languages that are now a hallmark of our species. Linguists and anthropologists theorize that complex language evolved just for this purpose, to coordinate hunting and gathering activities, to categorize an increasingly complex arsenal of hunting tools and weapons, and to convey details about animals and habitat that might be hidden from sight. In short, language came about for the same purposes that I'm engaged in at this very moment. Granted, these first hunting stories were probably not stories at all, at least not in the way we now think of that word. I imagine them more as instructions and descriptions, which is fitting, since the purpose of the vast majority of writing about hunting today is to teach readers how to do something. This something can often be quite esoteric. Maybe it's a technique for hunting mallard ducks over flooded corn in Iowa. Or maybe it's an explanation of why it's better to sharpen the blade of your skinning knife at an angle of 13 degrees rather than 15. Hunters usually call this kind of information how-to, and I have read and enjoyed a great many pieces of how-to writing in my life. But while you will find a trove of hunting tips and tricks within this book, this is not intended as how-to material. Instead, you might think of this book as why-to, who-to, and what-to. That is, this book uses the ancient art of the hunting story to answer the questions of why I hunt, who I am as a hunter, and what hunting means to me. As I ponder the first of those questions, why do I hunt, two particular moments come to mind. The first took place on a recent spring day when I was hunting turkeys in the Powder River Badlands of southeastern Montana with my brother Matt. Early that morning, we left Matt's pack llamas, Timmy and Haggy, tethered near our camp. Matt headed south, and I went into the next valley to the west. Around late morning, I started after a tom, or male turkey, that I'd heard gobbling several hundred yards away. I followed the bird for close to an hour, only once catching a glimpse of it. He was walking fast along the edge of a sandstone cliff, maybe about 30 yards higher than me and 200 yards out. I sat down amid a tangle of fallen timber and used a turkey call to mimic the soft clucks of a hen. Almost as soon as I did, the tom jumped off the cliff and took flight. He flapped his wings maybe 6 times and soared right over my head. Turkeys are not graceful flyers, nor are they graceful landers. This one crashed through the limbs of a ponderosa pine and then thudded to the ground on the timbered slope of a deep ravine off to my left. I turned my head in that direction so that my chin was over my left shoulder. I kept on clucking. I was hopeful that the tom would come to check on the source of the calls, but after a couple of minutes I hadn't seen or heard a thing. I called some more, but still nothing happened. You have to be very careful about movement and sound when you're hunting turkeys, so I continued to hold dead still even though I hadn't heard or seen the bird since it landed. Maybe about 5 minutes went by without my ever turning my head away from its position over my left shoulder. And then something strange happened. Suddenly someone sighed very loudly just behind my right shoulder. I've had coyotes and bobcats come to my turkey call, but this sigh sounded like that of an annoyed person who was slightly out of breath from running up a hill. My immediate response was to turn my head very quickly in its direction. My chin was just about to begin passing over my right shoulder when I noticed a large male black bear standing on its rear feet with its front feet propped up on a log that was leaning against the log that I was leaning against. I'm sure he was hoping to find a nest full of turkey eggs, and if everything went well, to catch